Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. Back-to-back big shows after a couple of weeks off. And three more excellent guests. We had Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred. We had former NFL quarterback and Kentucky legend Jared Lorenzen. And Oklahoma State football coach Mike Gundy. We found out more about Tiger's DUI and the five different drugs in his system at the time of that zombie ride. Kyle Schwarber may have etched his legend playing in last year's World Series on a mangled knee, but he one-upped himself the last few days. And Michael Bennett had something smart to say about the national anthem protests in the NFL. Lots to get to. Alvy, go ahead and roll that thing. You all remember Tiger Woods, right? You remember Tig, the former golfer who got pulled over on Memorial Day weekend and took a mugshot for the ages. You know that mugger? You know, the one with the disappearing hairline, the suitcases under his eyes, looking more like he was 61 than 41. That zombified pic instantly went up in the Mugshot Hall of Fame, right next to some of the other legends like Nick Nolte and Desmond Bryant's shirtless, tongue-out pose. The zoned-out cat in that booking photo looked like a guy who had just had himself a night. And it turns out Tiger did have himself a night. And he had your night and my night as well. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office released the toxicology report yesterday, and the results are shocking. You've probably seen this. What was this guy on? The better question is, what wasn't he on? Because the report showed that he had Vicodin, Dilaudid, Xanax, Ambien, and THC all in his system. In other words, Tiger was on the Tiger Slam of drugs. Two painkillers, an anxiety medication, a sleeping medication, and the active ingredient in marijuana. Let me repeat that one more time. Vicodin, Dilaudid, Xanax, Ambien, and THC. What? Molly, meth, pure opium, and horse tranks? Didn't want any of that? Winning the 2008 U.S. Open on a busted stick is nothing compared to him being conscious after that drug cocktail. Hell, calling that a drug cocktail doesn't even begin to do it justice. That's a whole drug ice luge. Did this guy go supermarket sweep on a Walgreens, just running up and down the shelves, knocking everything into a cart, and then ingesting it all? I mean, seriously, how is this cat even still alive? And how did nobody else get hurt that night? And remember when he came out with that statement? Though what happened was, quote, an unexpected reaction to prescribed medications, end quote. Look, I'm no chemist, but if you mix just about every medication there is, there are going to be some side effects. How could that possibly be, quote, unexpected? And remember when his team was so quick to point out that he hadn't been drinking and driving? Remember that? He was picked up for driving under the influence, and they couldn't wait to tell you there was no alcohol in his system. Yeah, right. Like, rolling around with five different substances in his system is better and safer than driving drunk. Because it's not. Of course he wasn't drunk. He didn't have any space in his stomach for booze after he slammed all those pills. This guy's like a pharmacy with legs. The freaking gall of he and his team to know that he was taking two pain meds, an anxiety medication, a sleeping medication, and somehow had the active ingredient in marijuana in his system, and then act like it was, quote, unexpected and no big deal. If you're hitting two opiates, an anxiety pill, and chasing that with sleeping meds and THC, trust me, it's a really big deal. It's a major cry for help, but they try to play it off like it was like nothing at all. Like to quote Tiger himself, it happens.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens to us all.
Happens to us all.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens.
I guess what I'm saying is at this point, I am so tired of Tiger and his team. Just go away. Get cleaned up. Sort out your life. Design golf courses. Hang out with your kids. Hopefully that stint in rehab took. Hopefully it worked out. It would be great. Everybody should just give up hope that this guy's ever going to win another major, because right about now, the best we can hope for is that he doesn't get all pilled up all over again and hurt himself or somebody else in the process. 5 different drugs. Yeah, but it's nothing at all. No big thing. Just an unexpected reaction to prescribed medication. Oh, all right. 1-800-636-8686. Seriously, I could not be more tired of that guy or his team. Especially them rushing in when that went down to say he had no alcohol. There was no alcohol involved. Yeah, no alcohol. Just Vike, Dilaudid, Xanax, Ambien, and THC.
WXYNZ.
Now you know your ABCs.
What are we doing?
Thank you, Ranger Rick.
Oh.
No.
I like that.
Go away. Hang out with your family. Do the right thing. We are joined by Rob Manfred. You know, you look at it, and there's so much talent in the game right now, from Mike Trout to Aaron Judge to Bryce Harper, to name only a few. Do you feel like those athletes are connecting with fans and resonating with fans in a way that you would like them to, or maybe is there more work that could even be done in that area?
Well, you know, marketing your players is an ongoing effort. It's something we're really focused on. We're excited about our new partnership with Under Armour. We think having a consumer brand on the field and having that consumer brand partnering with our individual athletes will encourage additional marketing of our player. Really important to us. But you know, I think if you take just one experience, Aaron Judge in the Home Run Derby, it's hard to argue that our players aren't connecting with our fans.
We're talking to the Commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. Now, purely from a fan's perspective, then, what was your reaction when you saw Harper go down with an injury after making contact with first base?
Well, look, you always hate to see any player, and particularly a player of Bryce's caliber, get injured during that part of the season that leads into our exciting postseason. Very grateful that the injury doesn't appear to be quite as serious as originally feared, and hopeful that Bryce will be back for some of the season in the postseason.
Yeah, I think when you say that, you speak for all the fans. What about from the commissioner's perspective? When you see a star get hurt the way he did, is that just one of those things, or is that something that might be prevented going forward? And if so, how?
Well, look, we always are looking for ways to improve the safety of our players on the field. Obviously, we've made a couple of important changes in recent years, the home plate collision rule and then the changes surrounding plays at second base. I think with this one, you know, it's one of those freak things, you know, two players headed for the bag at the same time and just putting his foot down at the wrong spot in relation to the bag. It's hard to know how you can prevent an injury like that.
Talking to the Commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. You know, we're talking also about the fans connecting with the players and how they do that. You know, one of the ways that some of the players choose to express their personalities is with a celebration, of course, after hitting a home run. But as we know, opposing pitchers do not always care for that. And that brings up the topic of the code and some of the unwritten rules of the game, where celebrating a home run might get you thrown at intentionally or unintentionally later on. So where do you come out at this point on the code? You feel like that's something that helps or maybe hurts the game?
Well, I think that that the code has always been a part of the baseball tradition. I think the most important point to make is I think that code is going to evolve. The code has always been established and, you know, effectively enforced by players. I think that the next generation of players, the young guys that are coming into the game right now, are a little different than their predecessors. And I do think you're going to see the code change to allow for a little more emotion on the field.
Commissioner of Major League Baseball is our guest, Rob Manfred. One of the issues that you've spoken about a number of times is the pace of play at the All-Star break. The average nine-inning game was 3 hours and 5 minutes. So what do you make of that number, and how important is it for you to maybe reduce that?
Well, I mean, I see pace of play and the length of the game as two separate issues. You know, how long a game takes is often determined by what happens on the field, the number of runs scored, whatever. More important to me is that we continue to focus on the elimination of dead time in the game so that whether it's a 10-9 game or a 2-1 game, the game moves along with good pace.
Yeah, for instance, when traditionalists hear ideas about things like pitch clocks, they get very nervous. Is that something that's on the table, or are there less dramatic ways of possibly speeding up the game?
Well, we've used the pitch clock in the minor leagues for a number of years. Even our most traditional baseball people have seen those games. They are in agreement that it moves the game along in a way that's positive without altering the fundamentals of baseball. So I think we should continue to discuss with the Players Association and will discuss pitch clocks.
Yeah, it puts everybody in kind of an interesting position in the sense that baseball has this incredibly rich tradition. So how do you go about balancing the traditions of the game with the need to evolve and change?
Well, I think on the issues related to pace of play, where we've landed is that we need to deal with the dead time in our game. Commercial breaks, mound visits, pitchers who don't deliver the ball promptly. Nobody's in favor of dead time. On the one hand, and I think we need to deal with those things first. And I think we should avoid, until we've eliminated the dead time at least, any change that would impact the outcome of a game, the way you use players, suggestions like relief pitchers having to pitch to more than one batter. We should avoid those changes until we've dealt with the dead time issue.
So as I mentioned at the top, you took over as commissioner in January of 2015. So as you take a step back and you look, what have the first 2.5 years of your time as commissioner been like, and have they been pretty much what you expected?
Look, my first 2.5 years have been tremendously exciting. I think maybe the single biggest thing is the influx of the great young stars into the game. I think it's a very exciting time for our game, and I think the general consensus is that we have a generation of young players that may be the most talented in decades. That continues to excite me every day. In terms of the day-to-day operation of the job, I was fortunate. I worked with Commissioner Seelig for a very long time. I had a pretty good idea about what the job was going to be like going into it.
I would imagine. So is there anything about that job that you didn't know when you first took over that you now know?
Well, the one thing that did surprise me a little bit at the beginning is, comments, particularly comments that relate to changes to the game on the field do evoke very strong reactions from our fans, and you have to be really careful about that. And I think it's just an indication of how attached to the game our fans are.
Finally, you mentioned Bud Seelig. What was it like for him after doing what he did for so long to walk away from that position? And then how often do you talk to him about the job itself now?
Well, I talk to Commissioner Seelig probably once a week, once every 10 days. I think he is to be commended. He was one of those rare individuals who had a phenomenal career, capped by his election to the Hall of Fame, yet walked away at a point in time that he was really ready to leave the game, and he deserves great credit for that.
This is a huge Michael Bennett house. In fact, it's a huge Martellus Bennett house. This house is all about the Bennetts. How many other guys are going to come on this show and talk about their meals and then crack on Brandon Mebane for his breakfast order the way Michael did back in the day? So are you guys at your destination? Did you make it? Are you done?
Yeah, we just got to work, man. Had to get that good lunch in before we had to go to this meeting to talk about the Cowboys.
Real quick, what did you guys have for lunch? Real quick, what did you have for lunch?
I had a bagel with pastrami on it. It was good.
Good work, good work. Cliff? Brandon, what'd you guys have?
What'd I have? A breakfast sandwich.
I like it. I see.
He had eggs, potatoes, and a side of French toast. I don't know who ordered a side of French toast. Who orders a side of French toast? I've never heard of that.
Michael Bennett cracking on Brandon Mebane back in the day. Or maybe it's because he's pretty much the only guy in the league who is willing to talk about his policy of no sex on Wednesday nights. Now, what about that no sex thing on Wednesdays?
It gives me more power. I got a lot more energy after the game for my wife.
How does she feel about that no sex thing on Wednesdays?
I don't know. I never asked her. She doesn't get used to it. I guess when she can go to the store and get what she wants, she's probably happy about that.
Yeah, and then Sunday nights, man. What's Sunday night like?
Oh, Sunday night. That's the big show.
Sunday night is the big show. So you're starting to get a sense of why this is a big Michael Bennett house. Or maybe it's because he compared one particular game to, well, I think I'll just let him handle that.
Aaron Rodgers says the best team lost today. That doesn't make any sense. When you lose, you lose.
How'd that make you feel when Aaron Rodgers came out and said, look, the better team did not win today?
If you were the best team, you would have won the game. You got to play all the way through the game to be a champion. You can't get ahead of yourself and think that you're going to win. It's pretty generation,
But the reason that I am Team Bennett is not just because Michael and Martellus are funny dudes and they say what's on their minds. It's because they think and they say what's on their minds. And what's on Michael's mind right now is what's happening in America. And the fact that he did not stand for the national anthem before that preseason game against the Chargers and does not intend to stand for the national anthem this season. And before you get all angry about this, listen to his thoughts behind that decision. Quote, Charlottesville had a lot to do with it, but I think it's just the journey of who I am as a person. I think everybody has a time where they feel like they need to be who they are and stand up for what they believe in. End quote. And then, before you crack on him for sitting and disrespecting the flag and the military, hear him out on that as well. Quote, first of all, I want people to understand that I love the military. My father's in the military. I love hot dogs like any other American. I love football like any other American. But I don't love segregation. I don't love riots or oppression. I just want to see people have the equality that they deserve. And I want to be able to use this platform to continuously push the message of that. End quote. Of course, he knows he's going to face backlash, but he's also willing to take that on. He's going into this eyes wide open. He knows what might come from it. End quote. I'm being vulnerable right now. There's a whole bunch of people sitting at home judging me, but they will never get to this point where they can be vulnerable. Let people attack me because they don't believe what I believe in. But at the end of the day, I'm being vulnerable to show every person that no matter what you believe in, keep fighting for it. Keep fighting for equality. Keep fighting for oppressed people. And keep trying to change society. End quote. So Bennett has been walking the walk in that department for quite some time, and he's just going to keep doing it. Another quote. I hope that I can activate everybody to get off their hands and feet and go out into the communities and push helping each other. Sit down with somebody that's the opposite sex. Sit down with somebody that's the opposite race, different religion, and understand that people are different and go out and join the community and try to change this society. Change what you're a part of. If you don't like it, keep changing it. End quote. So Colin Kaepernick may not have a gig right now, and we all know why he doesn't have a gig right now, but the conversation that Kaepernick started continues, whether people like it or not. We are joined by Jared Lorenzen. You were 13 pounds, 3 ounces at birth. You'd always been a big kid. And as you said in the trailer, your vegetables growing up were mac and cheese and potatoes. So what was life like for you growing up from a food standpoint?
That was it. I mean, it was, you know, Dad was working second shift. Mom did whatever she, you know, best she could. And it was eating to whatever you wanted. I mean, it was, you know, fish sticks and mac and cheese. It was Salisbury steak and mashed potatoes. It was, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so eating out was actually cheaper. You know, so you went to McDonald's and you went to Burger King, and it was just, you know, pizza night. You know, we didn't think anything of it.
Jared Lorenzen joining us. We're talking about the Jared Lorenzen Project, which was announced a few weeks back. So there was a period of time in your life, roughly 10 years from when you arrived in Kentucky through your NFL career, where you were stepping on scales all the time and constantly worrying about 2/10 or 4/10 of a pound. What was that time like, and what kind of a stress or kind of stress did that put on you?
It's a living hell for anybody that's big, especially, you know, when it's as well documented as I've been, literally living off 2, 4, 6, 8 tenths of pounds. You know, I was told I had to weigh 268 in order to try out for quarterback when Coach Morris got here. So I was 268.8. You know, I had to make sure I was on that 268 number. You know, it was, hey, I need you 275 in order for you to play football here in New York. If not, you're fined $400 per pound per day. So you start living like that, and it's literally every single day. It just wears on you. Just, you know, it absolutely fatigues the daylight out of you.
Jared Lorenzen joining us. So I would imagine you go through something like that, and then probably you don't want to get back on a scale. And then you go roughly 10 years without stepping on a scale, and then there's a moment in the trailer where you do step back on a scale. What were you expecting to see when you stepped on the scale that time?
You know what? I really didn't know. And, yeah, I did. I threw away every scale I've ever had.
for those 10 years because I was tired of living like that. You know, all of a sudden I went through those 10 years. I went through a divorce, so you hit some spots, you know, in your life there. And when I jumped back on that scale, the all of a sudden it all kind of hit me at once. And I don't know if you can see it in my eyes, but they almost glaze over because I didn't realize it got to there. Yeah, it was always big. Yeah, I was always kind of buying a bigger shirt or buying a bigger pair of pants, but you never realize, oh, my God, I'm at that number. That's the number I'm at. And then it just that's when it really kind of hit home.
So, Jared, what was that number, and then what was your reaction when you saw that number?
The number was 502. And that's when on the Jared Lorenzen Project on Facebook, I even tell it, like, if I would have not woken up the next morning, I don't think people would have been like, I think they would have been upset. I mean, you know, I would have liked to have thought that. They would have been like, well, what does he expect? And it's 500 pounds. You know, it's at some point it's not funny anymore. And I'm always going to still joke about the weight. But when it gets to that point, you know, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jared, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say that is one of the things that you say in the trailer, that if you don't wake up tomorrow, that people would be like, well, yeah, that's not a shock. What do you expect? Like how big he is. Damn. But, I mean, that's not funny. What's it mean to you to say that and to feel that?
That was the biggest one for me. That's the line, I guess, that stuck out for me because, you know, I've never gone in depth about my weight. I've always joked about it and pushed it off. But for that interview, it was very different for me. And it really was like, what are you doing with yourself? You know, I've got a 15-year-old daughter. I've got a soon-to-be 8-year-old son. You know, what are you doing? You know, you're being selfish right now. And luckily, that was taken about a year ago. I still don't do the scale thing yet. That'll be coming when we start the project. But I'm just thankful that I saw it before it got too late and before any of the, you know, heart condition or liver or whatever it may be was irreversible.
We're talking to Jared
Lorenzen. So luckily I found it before that point.
Sure, sure. And I'm going to talk to you about the people that are involved with this. But, you know, you touched on this. Like, for any athlete, the transition to life after sports can be really challenging, really difficult. What was it like for you when your NFL career ended?
You know, it wasn't bad at first. I thought I was okay. But when you're an athlete, that's all you see yourself as. Most athletes is, okay, now I'm done playing football. I'm 26, 27 years old. Oh, my God, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And you go through some deep, dark nights, you know, a lot of sleepless nights. And I think, you know, there was nobody there to tell me what I could and couldn't do. So I was just, you know, on my own doing my own thing and not worrying about anything until, you know, that day when I was at UK.
Now, you did play some football again. You and I spoke a couple of years back when you were playing for the River Monsters. But in the trailer, you talk about that moment where you were injured in a game. What went through your mind in that moment? What was the first thing you thought of when that happened?
One was, oh, God, I hope my leg, I hope it's just a sprain. I hope it's just a sprain. But I can recall it right now. I'm rolling to my left, and I knew where he was going. I knew where the defender was going. I've always had that little, you know, just instinct of, I know where they're trying to hit me. Protect yourself, and I couldn't. I could not get low enough to protect myself, and he hit it. He broke my tib fib, snapped it right there. It took about 2 days later before I said, you know, I'm done. I came back to my kids. You know, all of a sudden, Dad's laid up on the couch because he was too big and fat to protect himself, so they've got to take care of me. Just wasn't the sight that I wanted to see.
Jared Lorenzen, my guest. So that's what it comes down to. It keeps coming back to your kids. I've got to be there for my kids. I've got to be there for my family. So one of the people you talked to in the trailer is Dr. Philip Golea, and he's worked with everybody from Russell Wilson to Kim Kardashian and Kevin Love. He tells you that you're definitely looking at a door that says diabetes. What was your reaction when he told you that?
You know, he put it in the nicest possible way ever. He said, look, you're standing outside that door, and you could very easily walk in. As a matter of fact, I would expect you almost to walk in. He goes, what we need to do is we need to get out of that hallway and get you out of that house. and it was very point, very. And what I love about what Doctor does, what Goglia does, is he, as soon as you walk in, he pricks your finger. Okay, let's find out where your sugar levels are. And I got all excited. I was like, you know, we're going through my levels, and you know, my cholesterol. He's like, hey man, your cholesterol is really low, like super low. I'm like, sweet, isn't that good? He's like, no, your sugars are high, so you suck. And I'm like, all right, thanks for that, Doc. But he's very straight up and very honest with me. And that's what I need. I need that, you know, that extra kick in the butt. And I think that's, you know, what he's doing for me. You know, we'll definitely get him more on camera, because he has just been as straight up and as great as you can be.
Hey, listen, as somebody who's been an athlete your entire life, you understand this. The best thing about this, aside from the opportunity, is you've got this amazing team surrounding you with him and Gunnar Pedersen. So what then is your approach? How do you go about taking on this project?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I've got the support. I've got, you know, everybody on Facebook's been amazing. The replies that I've gotten, I mean, literally, Jim, 4,000 or 5,000 responses. There's been one jerk. And if you know anything about social media, they can be bad when they hide behind nameless names. But they've been great. So now it's on me. I'm going to approach it just like I would anything else. I'm going to dive full bore. It's the only way I know how to do it. You know, I'm treating it more or less as a season for me. You know, right now I'm doing my OTAs, so I'm a little behind the NFL guys, but I'm in my OTAs. You know, once we get this going in September 16th, that's kind of my preseason, and then we're really going to get full bore really quick. So, you know, I'm just going to go at it and see where the numbers lie afterwards.
The legend of Kyle Schwarber may have been etched when he fought his way back from that catastrophic knee injury, when he helped the Cubs win the World Series. But as impressive as that climb back was, I mean, the secret batting practice sessions, the detour through the Arizona Fall League, the 1,300 pitches that he tracked in the batting cage with just his eyes, all those things in order to come back to the World Series. Him hitting frozen ropes on one knee, a knee that was so jacked up that he couldn't even play in the field. Schwarber, the heart of the Cubs, did something way more impressive than all of that, and he did it over the past three games. My man went double golden sombrero. Double golden sombrero.
Here's the 1-2. Schwarber chases a low breaking ball, swings and misses, strike three. Swing and a miss, strike three. The 0-2, Schwarber swings and misses, strike three. He has struck out three times against Patrick Corbin. The right-hander fires. Strike three called, and the inning is over. And the 1-2. Schwarber swings and misses. Off-speed pitch got him. Right-hander ready, and the 3-2 on the way to Schwarber. Kyle swings and misses. Pitch down in the dirt. Schwarber strikes out. Full count on Schwarber. Here's a swing and a miss. Strike three.
2-0 Cubs at 0-2. Count on Kyle Schwarber. Runner at second, Anthony Rizzo. Here's the wind of the pitch. And a swing and a miss by Schwarber. That'll sit him down. He has struck out now 8 consecutive times.
Yeah, Kyle's had some struggles here as of late.
You think 8 straight K's, whiff after 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 whiff, a punch out streak that started on Saturday but didn't end until Monday, that spanned 3 games and 1500 miles. 8 straight K's, and he kept things rolling with a K in his first at bat against the Reds. It looked like he was locked and loaded for number 9. The count was full until a beanball let him off the hook. Hell yes, he was looking to wear one in that situation. Or willing to wear one in that situation. Probably looking to wear one in that situation. 8 straight. Yeah, I know. People want to talk about Schwarber slaying the Dragon and going deep against the Diamondbacks over the weekend in his first time back to Chase Field since he shredded his knee last spring. Heartwarming story? Sure. But anybody can hit a home run. Striking out 8 times in a row, try running that streak down. Nobody's breaking that. If you want to know where this Cubs season went wrong, just look at Schwarber's season. The guy went from the cover of SI, the heart of Theo's Cubs, to the heart of the lineup in AAA Des Moines before midsummer. And after 2 weeks on the farm trying to work out the kinks, he actually had improved, but now it's mid-August, and the guy that the Cubs thought would be among the best bats in the National League is still below the Mendoza line. That 3-game run which featured those eight strikeouts, actually did zero damage to his .93 batting average. And I know the Cubs aren't out of it. They're never going to be out of it as long as they run the talent out there that they have and they're playing in the NL Central. But at what point do you wonder if this guy's heroic return for the Fall Classic may have actually done more harm than good, if possible? I mean, sure, it helped kill the curse of the Billy Goat. He brought home a World Series to the North Side, and he let all those aging hipsters in retro Cubs jerseys that were two sizes too small cry and hug it out in the streets of Wrigleyville. But he may have also put a permanent hole in his bat, a bat that was supposed to be an anchor in the Cubs lineup for years to come. This guy struck out in almost 40% of his at-bats since being called up. That's even worse than it was before he got sent down in the first place. But enough about that, because we all just witnessed baseball gold. Scratch that. Double gold. Because Schwarber might do a lot of magical things in his baseball career, but it will never be as magical as eight straight punch-outs. So take a bow, my man. And then take a seat and let somebody who can actually get wood on a ball get an at-bat right now. We are joined by head coach Mike Gundy. Mason Rudolph was on the cover of SI's College Football Preview issue, and Sports Illustrated has you as one of the four teams in the college football playoffs, so you've got some enormous expectations. How do you approach that with your team? For instance, is it attention and pressure that you're going to embrace, or would you rather kind of keep that away?
Well, I just embrace it. There's so much exposure out there with these millennials, and they've all got their phones. They get updates. They have Snapchat, Twitter, so on and so forth. So they see what's out there. And my approach with them is, look, you're a good football team. You're mature. We've got guys that are on this team that are going to be up for national awards. People are going to say a lot of good things about you. And that's awesome for Oklahoma State. You guys and the men that have come through here before you have elevated this program to a certain level. You're a good football team. Now do something about it. We need you to work hard, need you to do everything right, take care of your bodies. Coaches talk from here on out, so on and so forth. But I embraced it and said, you know, let's back it up and go play and let's have some fun.
You know, you mentioned their telephones and the platforms. You know, I guess it's not really realistic or pragmatic to take their telephones from them. Or is there a part of you that says, you know what, we should take the telephones from them, or at least eliminate the platforms? How do you approach social media? Do you want them on it? Do you want them reading it? Do you want them participating? Or what do you tell your team?
We don't take anything from them. I've got a great example at home. I have a 15 and a 12-year-old, so I still live in that world. And our approach is that if you take their phones, it has become a part of their life. They're going to get a Go phone. They're going to find a phone somewhere. They're going to communicate. So we educate them on what we want them to do. If they want to be on social media, that's their choice. There are parameters. We don't ever talk about our team. We don't ever talk about the other team. We say things that are positive. And fortunately for us, we haven't had any issues on social media. Social media can be a great tool or it can be a damaging tool just based on how you use it. But we do not take any of that away from them. We allow them to do whatever they want to do. And up to this point, it's worked good for our team.
I agree with you. At times, it could be the best thing ever, and then other times, it could be the worst thing ever. You have to understand exactly what it is and understand how to use it. Mike Gundy joining us. You know, I mentioned it's not just Rudolph. You've also got James Washington at wide receiver. You've got weapons all across the field. Now, you've had some really good offenses in your time at Oklahoma State, but what about the upside of this particular unit? How good can it be?
I mean, I really like where we're at. We've got a very mature quarterback that has stayed focused. He's had a lot of interest across the country, and his work habits have been really good. He's got the respect of the team because he's played injured. You know, it's twice, and you know, he's had a broken foot and he played in it with it. He had a broken rib and he's played with it, so the team respects him. But we have a number of guys on defense. Not anybody that everybody's saying, hey, you know, this guy is going to be an All-American. But I think overall, we got a better defense than we've had. We're really fast. We have to stay healthy at key positions like every other team in the country. And we should be good on offense. I like our kicking game. You know, we've arguably got as good a wide receivers as anybody in the country. We have freshman running back that rushed for 1,200 yards. So we have a lot of things going for us. when I drive home from work, you know, at times I sit and think, golly, sometimes when you have so many things going for you, what do I need to do as a head coach to try to make sure nothing bad happens? And I haven't come up with that answer. So just continue to talk to them every day like you do with your own kids at home about trying to do the very best they can and be unselfish. And so far, the guys have done a really nice job with it this summer.
Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy joins us. Now, you're not one to spend a lot of time looking back, but your teams have had double-digit wins 5 times in the last 7 years. And prior to that, the program had a total of 3 double-digit wins, and you were the quarterback for 2 of those seasons. So what's it mean to have this program in the place that it's in right now?
That's the one thing that that I've felt a little selfish about. Everything in our program is about all of us. There's 200 people, there's 135 players, there's 65 staff with all the different areas that work with our team every day. And the one thing that I'm most proud of is that we're starting to elevate Oklahoma State University into being a national football school. And it takes years. Your tradition-rich, you know, if somebody just said, hey, Jim, I need you to write down on a paper the top 10 tradition-rich schools in the country, where you're gonna say SC, you're going to say Michigan, you're going to say Notre Dame, you're going to say OU, you're going to say Texas, and so on and so forth. Well, I think if you expand that out to the top 20 over the last 20 years because of what we've done in the last 8 or 10, Oklahoma State may be one of those schools. But it needs to be 10 more years of playing at a high level, and then we can get into that class. That has been our goal from day one. We've been fantastic in the classroom, and our APRs through the roof and all those things that matter, because it's important to me and to our staff that we put out quality young men that can go out there in society and be productive in the world and in our country, where we need young men that understand contributing and being productive in society. The next thing is whenever I'm done coaching here, I want Oklahoma State to be a school that people say year in and year out, they're a top 20 school.
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned it's going to take 10 more years. 10 more years to get to that point where you want to be, and you just turned 50, which I'll ask you about in a minute. Do you feel like you want to do this 10 more years, and do you feel like you can do it at the same level you're doing it right now for 10 more years?
I think so. I mean, I just turned 50. I feel 35. I act 25. I mean, I've been fortunate with my health. I really enjoy being around the players. Every day I get up, I don't have a feeling that comes over me like, oh man, you know. I'm excited about getting to work. When we have issues, I'm excited about solving the problems. When we're not playing as well, I'm excited about getting in the room and finding out what the answers are and improving in the areas that we can. So as long as that's good, but you know, I talked to Bob Stoops, you know, about when he decided to get out of it, and you know, he said, I just felt like it was time. I just didn't have that drive anymore. And they say that's what happens. I don't see that coming on, but I do agree with what Bob said. When it does come on, this is too much to do this. It's full time. It's 24/7. The phone's ringing all the time, recruiting. And if you're not into it 100%, I would think it's extremely difficult to be successful.
Mike, did you see that coming with Bob Stoops, or were you shocked when you saw the announcement?
Wasn't shocked, but I was surprised. He's 56 years old. Obviously, he's made enough money. He's won at a high level. He enjoys the other side of football. He loves to be. He's got a house in Florida by the ocean, and he loves to do other things. He likes to play golf, and I think that he might have gotten to a point where he said, in order for me to enjoy this part of my life, I'm not going to be able to be the head coach, because the demand is just too much. You can't do it. And so I was surprised but not shocked.
Mike Gundy, my guest, you mentioned that you're 50, you feel 35, and you act 25. Now, I've got two things that I want to ask you about with regards to that. And tell me if you feel the same way. I'm a little older than you, and I think about what my father did and said when he was the age that I'm at right now, and we're totally different people. I'm thinking to myself, there's no way my old man would think and say at 52 what I say right now. What exactly is that? Because I would imagine you feel the same way.
Well, we live in a world. I'm coaching, but in your profession with what you do, you live in a world where we're forced, in a sense, to relate to our audience. And you have a lot of young people, like my son's in college. He listens to you all the time. So you have a lot of people that you have to relate to. and you're smart enough to know how to do it. Well, I have to relate to young men that are in their 20s. Now, I don't pretend at any time to think that I can go hang out with them at night and relate to them. I don't listen to the music they listen to. I mean, I don't speak their language, essentially. But I can relate to them based on the important aspects of what it takes for us to lead them as young men in this program. And in my opinion, you can do it different ways. Coach Snyder at Kansas State, 70, I think he's 78 years old, and he's had a tremendous career, and he's done it differently than I do. But for me at Oklahoma State, being who I am, I can't be anybody else other than myself. And I've always been more comfortable trying to stay up and stay with the times and relate to them the best I can, but then also remind them at times, I've already lived your life. I've done the things that you're thinking about doing. Make good decisions, because I made a lot of terrible decisions when I was in college. And that gives them both sides of it from their head coach. And so I think that's helped me kind of stay in with the crowd, getting up into my upper 40s and now 50 years old.
Mike Gundy joining us. Mike, you've been great with your time, but I cannot let you go without asking you about the mullet. Now that you've had it for a while, have you changed your approach to caring for the mullet? Do you start to curl it at all?
Well, I've gone a couple different ways. I've let the rest of it grow out. And in fact, I'm probably going to go to the bi-level on the sides. I'm getting a little gray on my sideburns, and I think if I raise them about 3/4 of an inch, that it'll hide that gray.
Right.
And I'm letting the rest grow out. But it's been a lot of fun. And I'll be honest with you, Jim, last year, and even really over the last 4 or 5 months, there has been as much pressure on what to do with my hair as there is to win a stinking football game.
No doubt.
And it's been like out of control. And so I joke about it, but what it's done between that and the wrestling singlet and the rattlesnake and all the other stuff, it's given our university tremendous free marketing and exposure. And for Oklahoma State, we don't have the luck of just walking in with a logo on our shirt and somebody saying, I want to come to school there. We have to market our product, and then we have to back it up. And that's where all that's tied into at this time.
Yeah, but Mike, to your point, there's a lot of pressure. In fact, there was a wave of terror throughout the nation a few months back when there was a photo of you allegedly in a stylist chair getting the mullet cut. Now, have you ever considered taking it down and maybe even going back to keeping your lettuce tight?
I mean, I've thought about everything, and what you're talking about is crazy. I went in to just get trimmed over the ears and some stuff at that time, and one of the students walked by and saw me, and I didn't realize it, and they had taken a picture through the chair, and it was out, and there were people calling, and why are you cutting it, and my players, and so on and so forth, and I'm like, dude, just chill. I mean, I'm just getting a trim a little bit, and then I actually cut 4 inches off of it about 2 months ago because it was ponytail potential. I mean, I was either going to have to put it in a ponytail or trim it a little bit. So I had to trim it a little bit. I just wasn't ready to go the ponytail route.
Hey, listen, with a mullet like that comes a great deal of responsibility and power. So, Mike, a final thought. Obviously, you're in a great place. You sound extremely comfortable and extremely happy. We talked a little bit about you turning 50, and we did talk about whether or not maybe you could come out to Los Angeles and have a party and we could remake the rant at 50. That didn't happen, but you did turn 50 on Saturday. How was the party and how is 50?
Well, I was smart. I knew it was going to be during the season, so I had a get-together with all my high school buddies in June. And there was about 10 or 12 of us, and they came to my house. And so we had a good time for a couple days and hung out and told stories and played golf or whatever. And then I did go and spend 2 days in Vegas with some buddies. But last Saturday, the NCAA has new rules now, Jim, you know, where every X number of practices you have to take a day off. And so it fell on my birthday, the way that the new rule took effect. And I counted back, and I don't think I've had a day off on my birthday since 1982. And that was the last year before I started into two-a-days as a seventh grader. I think that's the last time that I didn't work or play football on my birthday. So I went home to see my mom and hung out with her and my dad for about 4 hours. So that was an awesome day.
We were joined by head coach Mike Gundy. Mason Rudolph was on the cover of SI's College Football Preview issue, and Sports Illustrated has you as one of the four teams in the college football playoffs, so you've got some enormous expectations. How do you approach that with your team? For instance, is it attention and pressure that you're going to embrace, or would you rather kind of keep that away?
Well, I just embrace it. There's so much exposure out there with these millennials, and they've all got their phones. They get updates. They have Snapchat, Twitter, so on and so forth. So they see what's out there. And my approach with them is, look, you're a good football team. You're mature. We've got guys that are on this team that are going to be up for national awards. People are going to say a lot of good things about you. And that's awesome for Oklahoma State. You guys and the men that have come through here before you have elevated this program to a certain level. You're a good football team. Now do something about it. We need you to work hard, need you to do everything right, take care of your bodies. Coaches talk from here on out, so on and so forth. But I embraced it and said, you know, let's back it up and go play and let's have some fun.
You know, you mentioned their telephones and the platforms. You know, I guess it's not really realistic or pragmatic to take their telephones from them. Or is there a part of you that says, you know what, we should take the telephones from them, or at least eliminate the platforms? How do you approach social media? Do you want them on it? Do you want them reading it? Do you want them participating? Or what do you tell your team?
We don't take anything from them. I've got a great example at home. I have a 15 and a 12-year-old, so I still live in that world. And our approach is that if you take their phones, it has become a part of their life. They're going to get a Go phone. They're going to find a phone somewhere. They're going to communicate. So we educate them on what we want them to do. If they want to be on social media, that's their choice. There are parameters. We don't ever talk about our team. We don't ever talk about the other team. We say things that are positive. And fortunately for us, we haven't had any issues on social media. Social media can be a great tool or it can be a damaging tool just based on how you use it. But we do not take any of that away from them. We allow them to do whatever they want to do. And up to this point, it's worked good for our team.
I agree with you. At times, it could be the best thing ever, and then other times, it could be the worst thing ever. You have to understand exactly what it is to understand how to use it. Mike Gundy joining us. You know, I mentioned it's not just Rudolph. You've also got James Washington at wide receiver. You've got weapons all across the field. Now, you've had some really good offenses in your time at Oklahoma State, but what about the upside of this particular unit? How good can it be?
I mean, I really like where we're at. We've got a very mature quarterback that has stayed focused. He's had a lot of interest across the country, and his work habits have been really good. He's got the respect of the team because he's played injured. You know, it was twice, and you know, he's had a broken foot and he played in it with it. He had a broken rib and he's played with it, so the team respects him. But we have a number of guys on defense. Not anybody that everybody's saying, hey, you know, this guy is going to be an All-American, but I think overall, we got a better defense than we've had. We're really fast. We have to stay healthy at key positions like every other team in the country. And we should be good on offense. I like our kicking game. You know, we've arguably got as good a wide receivers as anybody in the country. We have a freshman running back that rushed for 1,200 yards. So we have a lot of things going for us. When I drive home from work, you know, at times I sit and think, golly, sometimes when you have so many things going for you, what do I need to do as a head coach to try to make sure nothing bad happens? And I haven't come up with that answer. So just continue to talk to them every day like you do with your own kids at home about trying to do the very best they can and be unselfish. And so far, the guys have done a really nice job with it this summer.
Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy joins us. Now, you're not one to spend a lot of time looking back, but your teams have had double-digit wins 5 times in the last 7 years. And prior to that, the program had a total of 3 double-digit wins, and you were the quarterback for 2 of those seasons. So what's it mean to have this program in the place that it's in right now?
That's the one thing that that I've felt a little selfish about. Everything in our program is about all of us. There's 200 people, there's 135 players, there's 65 staff with all the different areas that work with our team every day. And the one thing that I'm most proud of is that we're starting to elevate Oklahoma State University into being a national football school. And it takes years. Your tradition-rich, you know, if somebody just said, hey, Jim, I need you to write down on a paper the top 10 tradition-rich schools in the country, where you're gonna say SC, you're going to say Michigan, you're going to say Notre Dame, you're going to say OU, you're going to say Texas, and so on and so forth. Well, I think if you expand that out to the top 20 over the last 20 years because of what we've done in the last 8 or 10, Oklahoma State may be one of those schools. But it needs to be 10 more years of playing at a high level, and then we can get into that class. That has been our goal from day one. We've been fantastic in the classroom, and our APR is through the roof and all those things that matter, because it's important to me and to our staff that we put out quality young men that can go out there in society and be productive in the world and in our country, where we need young men that understand contributing and being productive in society. The next thing is whenever I'm done coaching here, I want Oklahoma State to be a school that people say year in and year out, they're a top 20 school.
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned it's going to take 10 more years. 10 more years to get to that point where you want to be, and you just turned 50, which I'll ask you about in a minute. Do you feel like you want to do this 10 more years, and do you feel like you can do it at the same level you're doing it right now for 10 more years?
I think so. I mean, I just turned 50. I feel 35. I act 25. I mean, I've been fortunate with my health. I really enjoy being around the players. Every day I get up, I don't have a feeling that comes over me like, oh, man, you know. I'm excited about getting to work. When we have issues, I'm excited about solving the problems. When we're not playing as well, I'm excited about getting in the room and finding out what the answers are and improving in the areas that we can. So as long as that's good, but, you know, I talked to Bob Stoops, you know, about when he decided to get out of it. And you know, he said, I just felt like it was time. I just didn't have that drive anymore. And they say that's what happens. I don't see that coming on, but I do agree with what Bob said. When it does come on, it's too much to do this. It's full-time. It's 24/7. The phone's ringing all the time, recruiting. And if you're not into it 100%, I would think it's extremely difficult to be successful.
Mike, did you see that coming with Bob Stoops, or were you shocked when you saw the announcement?
Wasn't shocked, but I was surprised. He's 56 years old. Obviously, he's made enough money. He's won at a high level. He enjoys the other side of football. He loves to be... He's got a house in Florida by the ocean, and he loves to do other things. He likes to play golf, and I think that he might have gotten to a point where he said, in order for me to enjoy this part of my life, I'm not going to be able to be the head coach, because the demand is just too much. You can't do it. And so I was surprised but not shocked.
Mike Gundy, my guest, you know, you mentioned that you're 50 – you feel 35, and you act 25. Now, I've got two things that I want to ask you about with regards to that. And tell me if you feel the same way. I'm a little older than you, and I think about what my father did and said when he was the age that I'm at right now, and we're totally different people. I'm thinking to myself, there's no way my old man would think and say at 52 what I say right now. What exactly is that? Because I would imagine you feel the same way.
Well, we live in a world. I'm coaching, but in your profession, with what you do, you live in a world where we're forced, in a sense, to relate to our audience. And you have a lot of young people. Like my son's in college; he listens to you all the time. So you have a lot of people that you have to relate to, and you're smart enough to know how to do it. Well, I have to relate to young men that are in their 20s. Now, I don't pretend at any time to think that I can go hang out with them at night and relate to them. I don't listen to the music they listen to. I mean, I don't speak their language, essentially, but I can relate to them based on the important aspects of what it takes for us to lead them as young men in this program. And in my opinion, you can do it different ways. Coach Snyder at Kansas State, 70, I think he's 78 years old, and he's had a tremendous career. And he's done it differently than I do. But for me at Oklahoma State, being who I am, I can't be anybody else other than myself. And I've always been more comfortable trying to stay up and stay with the times and relate to them the best I can, but then also remind them at times, I've already lived your life. I've done the things that you're thinking about doing. Make good decisions, because I made a lot of terrible decisions when I was in college. And that gives them both sides of it from their head coach. And so I think that's helped me kind of stay in with the crowd, getting up into my upper 40s and now 50 years old.
Mike Gundy joining us. Mike, you've been great with your time, but I cannot let you go without asking you about the mullet. Now that you've had it for a while, have you changed your approach to caring for the mullet? Do you start to curl it at all?
Well, I've gone a couple different ways. I've let the rest of it grow out. And in fact, I'm probably going to go to the bi-level on the sides. I'm getting a little gray on my sideburns, and I think if I raise them about 3/4 of an inch, that it'll hide that gray.
Right.
And I'm letting the rest grow out. But it's been a lot of fun. And I'll be honest with you, Jim, last year, and even really over the last 4 or 5 months, there has been as much pressure on what to do with my hair as there is to win a stinking football game.
No doubt.
And it's been like out of control. And so I joke about it, but what it's done between that and the wrestling singlet and the rattlesnake and all the other stuff, it's given our university tremendous free marketing and exposure. And for Oklahoma State, we don't have the luck of just walking in with a logo on our shirt and somebody saying, I want to come to school there. We have to market our product, and then we have to back it up. And that's where all that's tied into at this time.
Yeah, but Mike, to your point, there's a lot of pressure. In fact, there was a wave of terror throughout the nation a few months back when there was a photo of you allegedly in a stylist chair getting the mullet cut. Now, have you ever considered taking it down and maybe even going back to keeping your lettuce tight?
I mean, I've thought about everything, and what you're talking about is crazy. I went in to just get trimmed over the ears and some stuff at that time, and one of the students walked by and saw me, and I didn't realize it, and they had taken a picture through the chair, and it was out, and there were people calling, and why are you cutting it, and my players, and so on and so forth, and I'm like, dude, just chilled. I mean, I'm just getting a trim a little bit, and then I actually cut 4 inches off of it about 2 months ago because it was ponytail potential. I mean, I was either going to have to put it in a ponytail or trim it a little bit. So I had to trim it a little bit. I just wasn't ready to go the ponytail route.
Yeah, listen, with a mullet like that comes a great deal of responsibility and power. So, Mike, a final thought. Obviously, you're in a great place. You sound extremely comfortable and extremely happy. We talked a little bit about you turning 50, and we did talk about whether or not maybe you could come out to Los Angeles and have a party and we could remake the rant at 50. That didn't happen, but you did turn 50 on Saturday. How was the party and how is 50?
Well, I was smart. I knew it was going to be during the season, so I had a get-together with all my high school buddies in June. And there was about 10 or 12 of us, and they came to my house. And so we had a good time for a couple days and hung out and told stories and played golf or whatever. And then I did go and spend 2 days in Vegas with some buddies. But last Saturday, the NCAA has new rules now, Jim, you know, where every X number of practices you have to take a day off. And so it fell on my birthday, the way that the new rule took effect. And I counted back, and I don't think I've had a day off on my birthday since 1982. And that was the last year before I started into two-a-days as a seventh grader. I think that's the last time that I didn't work or play football on my birthday. So I went home to see my mom and hung out with her and my dad for about 4 hours. So it was all. So that was an awesome day.
Thank you for listening, and you know what you have to do right now. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, and as always, trust the podcast, and then check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle.